you're a QuickBooks customer looking to grow your business without the growing pains, you need the Intuit ERP. Upgrade to Intuit Enterprise Suite in a matter of hours. It's the AI-native ERP from the makers of QuickBooks. Learn more at intuit.com/ERP.
Struggling to see up close? Make it visible with Viz. Viz is a once daily prescription eye drop to treat blurry near vision for up to 10 hours. The most common side effects that may be experienced while using Viz include eye irritation, temporary dim or dark vision, headaches, and eye redness. Talk to an eye doctor to learn if Viz is right for you. Learn more at Viz.com.
Hello and welcome to the Bullard Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Miller. Congrats to Anora. A great film on a win last night. Lots of wins at the Oscars and happy Lundi Gras. Much has happened since we last taped. Had it not been my husband's 40th birthday and Mardi Gras weekend, I might have come back on to do an emergency pod. But, you know, sometimes you guys just got to wait for the good stuff. And so I got Bill Kristol back here and it's Monday. How you doing, Bill?
I'm doing fine. Sam and I did a pod yesterday, you'll be glad to know, which covers some of this, but we can get into much more depth here. Sam, you know, you kind of skate across the surface, but Tim Miller, you're talking about the deep dives, you know?
That is great to know. No, I was nursing a hangover yesterday, so I did not tune in for you and Sam, but people can get our little Sunday bonus conversations on Substack. So, you know, go to the Bulwark, sign up for Bulwark Plus. You don't have to wait for me till Monday afternoon that way. All right. Where should we start? I think we got to start with the sneer heard around the world from J.D. Vance. I'm going to play a series of clips from the White House summit, so to speak, between Vladimir Zelensky, Putin. That was unintentional. Between Vladimir Zelensky, Trump,
that was good.
And Vance. Things were going okay. I mean, you know, okay for Trump on the Trump scale until J.D. decided to interject into a question from the press about whether Trump had been too nice to Putin. Let's listen.
All right, one more question. I want to respond to this. So look, for 4 years in the United States of America, we had a president who stood up at press conferences and talked tough about Vladimir Putin, and then Putin invaded Ukraine and destroyed a significant chunk of the country. The path to peace and the path to prosperity is maybe engaging in diplomacy. We tried the pathway of Joe Biden of thumping our chest and pretending that the President of the United States' words mattered more than the President of the United States' actions.
I signed with him, Macron, and Merkel, we signed ceasefire. Ceasefire, all of them told me that he will never go. We signed him with gas contract. Yes, but after that, he broken this ceasefire. He killed our people, and he didn't exchange prisoners. We signed the exchange of prisoners, but he didn't do it. What kind of diplomacy, JD, you are speaking about? What do you mean?
I'm talking about the kind of diplomacy that's going to end the destruction of your country.
Yes, but if you
Mr. President, with respect, I think it's disrespectful for you to come into the Oval Office and try to litigate this in front of the American media. Right now, you guys are going around and forcing conscripts to the front lines because you have manpower problems. You should be thanking the president for trying to bring it into this conflict.
Have you ever been to Ukraine that you say what problems we have?
I have been to...
Come once.
I've actually watched and seen the stories, and I know what happens is you bring them on a propaganda tour, Mr. President. Do you disagree that you've had problems bringing people into your military? And do you think that it's respectful to come to the Oval Office of the United States of America and attack the administration that is trying to prevent the destruction of your country?
A lot of questions. Let's start from the beginning.
Sure.
First of all, during the war, everybody has problems, even you.
All right. We're going to get to then President Trump intervening there. But I wanted to start with JD since he kicked off the kerfuffle. Kind of a mixed message there. He begins by condescendingly lecturing Zelensky about diplomacy and how we need diplomacy now. And then he proceeds to berate and chastise Zelensky, which isn't maybe the best form of diplomacy I've ever seen. But I'm curious what you thought about that, Bill.
I mean, it was a setup, obviously, by Trump and JD. Kind of, I don't know if it was semi-bad cop and really bad cop or what, or maybe, but JD knew what he was doing. He had his little talking points prepared. They wanted to do what Trump later says in the tweet, what is it, portray Zelensky as an enemy of peace, to damage support for Zelensky here at home, especially among those Republicans, half of them on the Hill, right, who a year ago voted for aid to Ukraine, to carry out Trump's pro-Putin policy, he needs to move the entire Republican Party in his direction, or at least it would be helpful for him to do so, not just the half of it that's with him already. And that's what the purpose of this meeting was. Zelensky came here to sign a deal. I mean, he made big concessions because he wanted to honor Trump's somewhat ridiculous, I believe, request and somewhat extortionate request for the deal on minerals. But he came here for that reason. And then they changed the deal and sandbagged Zelensky. And JD was kind of the heavier of the two sandbaggers, but Trump went pretty far too.
And I guess it was definitely set up, but this all happens like 38 minutes in about to the press conference. And, you know, you get in, you're into the Q&A. And at some level, Trump, you know, I think wants the show, you know, kind of like, oh, I'm going to make him come here and we're going to sign his way his minerals to us and say we got a great deal. And so, like, do you think Trump and JD thought that there was potentially a clean version of this, or that it was a certain that JD was going to go at him? Because I'm not sure.
Well, I think the way JD went at him left Zelensky no choice. A, B, if you think about the alleged deal they wanted a week ago, it included Zelensky holding elections in Ukraine. That's become a huge talking point on the pro-Trump right, which he said he can't do and won't do, and the Constitution doesn't permit him to do in Ukraine. This deal is going nowhere anyway. So they weren't going to get a deal with Zelensky. They're not going to get a deal with Putin, I suspect, unless it's a total and utter just capitulation to let him keep fighting and devastating Ukraine. And so I think this was for Trump's domestic politics here more than anything else.
All right. So after JD intervenes, why aren't you thanking us? Why aren't you thanking us after he's thanked us 100 million times?
He literally had thanked Trump and repeatedly went out of his way, having been treated pretty badly by Trump, I've got to say, has tried to be respectful and thank him. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah. Here's then Trump kind of changing his tune.
But you have nice ocean and don't feel now, but you will feel it in the future. God bless.
You don't know that.
God bless. You don't God bless. That. You don't, will not have a war.
Don't tell us what we're going to feel. We're trying to solve a problem. Don't tell us what we're going to feel.
I'm not telling you.
Because
I'm
you're in no position to dictate that.
That's Remember exactly what
you're doing. You're in no position to dictate what we're going to feel.
You
we're going to feel very
you will
good.
Feel influence.
We're going to feel very
I'm
good and very strong.
You will feel influence.
You're right now not in a very good position. You've allowed
from
yourself
very,
to be in a very bad
very
position, and he happens
war.
To be right about
from
it.
From the very beginning of the war,
you're not
Mr.
in a good position.
I
you don't have the cards right now.
The Trump thing kind of reminds me of like a couple that is fighting, and that when they have had a couple too many to drink, Trump's just like, don't tell me how to feel. Like they're not, the fight isn't about anything, right? Like Trump just lashes out at him and, you know, again, starts berating him, then gets into this metaphor about the cards. And like, it's not, I don't think he even understands what Zelensky's trying to say. Like Zelensky's point is that like, I didn't have the cards for day one. Everybody thought we were going to lose this war in 3 days. And like we fought and we fought. And I guess Trump just doesn't think about it from anybody's perspective besides his own feelings, I guess.
Right. And they're the feelings of a bully. So when Zelensky refuses to grovel, that sets Trump off. And there he was lecturing Zelensky. I mean, almost really unimaginable, I would say, that this was happening in the Oval Office. And I was struck, I'm sure you were, by I didn't see it. I was at a conference. I saw it shortly after. But the number of texts and emails I had from people, including people who aren't that political, people I haven't been in touch with that much, people who were slightly more Trump adjacent than I guess that's a very low bar, but who were somewhat Trump adjacent, you know, and acquiescent. People were just sickened, as one person said to me, by the spectacle of an American president and vice president lecturing Zelensky, who we have all supported and correctly supported for 3 years, exactly 3 years, right?
If data management is slowing down your business, you need the Intuit ERP. If one entity is here, and one here, and one here, and one here, you need the Intuit ERP. If scaling your business feels like starting over, you need the Intuit ERP. Intuit Enterprise Suite is the AI-native ERP solution that consolidates, migrates, and automates, all in one place. Learn more at intuit.com/ERP.
They say everything happens for a reason, but I suspect everything happens for a reason. Like this commercial break. Did you need 15 seconds away from music? Or 15 seconds to eat a Reese's? Perhaps it's true. Everything happens for a reason.
So a couple more clips, and then I want to get into what the ramifications are now. But here is the next little bit where JD gets back in and things really, really derail.
You have to be thankful. You don't have the cards. You're buried there. You're people are dying. You're running low on soldiers. Listen, you're running low on soldiers. It would be a damn good thing. And then you tell us, I don't want a ceasefire. I don't want a ceasefire. I want to go and I want this. Look, if you could get a ceasefire right now, I tell you, you'd take it so the bullets stop flying and your men stop getting killed.
Of course, we want to stop the war.
But you're saying you don't want a ceasefire.
But I said to you,
I want a ceasefire.
With guarantees.
Because you.
For just the audio listeners, for people who have not suffered through watching the videotape of this, when Trump is doing the, he like does a Zelensky imitation there, where he's going, I don't want a ceasefire. I don't want a ceasefire. And he's like, he's making a moron face. And it is about the most childish scene that you could possibly imagine inside the Oval Office in that little bit.
Horrible.
Okay, I got one more, Bill. I'm sorry.
We got. Yeah, you're really putting me through, making me suffer here, you know.
I am making you suffer. I'm making the listeners. We have, it must be listened to. Like, it is outrageous. I rewatched the whole 48 minutes this morning because in the clips, it is appalling and shocking. But just like watching the contour of the conversation just completely derail. And like, let's be honest, just JD and Trump losing their cool. This is why I object a little bit to like the fact that it was a setup, because I think that clearly they had prepared, you know, how JD was going to go at him. But like the degree to which these two just like lost their cool and start shouting like about their feelings and about, you know, needing to be thanked. And then it closes here with like something that that could have been, and it would almost be too rude to Newsmax to explain what is next here as being a segment on Newsmax. And it is on the, it is a rant from the furthest, most idiotic realms of the fever swamps. And it's the president of the United States. Let's listen to the last bit.
She's asking, what if Russia breaks the ceasefire?
What if they, what if anything? What if a bomb drops on your head right now? Okay? What if they broke it? I don't know. They broke it with Biden because Biden, they didn't respect him. They didn't respect Obama. They respect me. Let me tell you, Putin went through a hell of a lot with me. He went through a phony witch hunt where they used him and Russia. Russia, Russia, Russia. You ever hear of that deal? That was a phony Hunter Biden, Joe Biden scam. Hillary Clinton, Shifty Adam Schiff. It was a Democrat scam. And he had to go through that. And he did go through it. We didn't end up in a war. And he went through it. He was accused of all that stuff. He had nothing to do with it. It came out of Hunter Biden's bathroom. It came out of Hunter Biden's bedroom. It was disgusting.
What is he even talking about? Like, what came out of Hunter Biden's bedroom?
I guess the laptop. He's conflating the Biden laptop, I suppose, with the alleged Russia hoax. But I think it's very revealing. I think he does lose it there. I don't think that's part of the intention of it, I suspect. Very revealing that he thinks Putin went through it with him. He and Putin are buddies. They are allies. They were unfairly besmirched. They're together in this fight. I mean, he just explicitly says that. There's no more of the pretense of, I'm a hard-headed guy negotiating with Putin, and there are some problems with what Russia's been doing at some point in the world, or maybe at some point in the 2016 election, after all. Nope. I mean, one forgets, in 2016, he asked Russia to intervene. I mean, this has been, but this is the full flowering, I'd say, of not just the abandonment of Zelensky, but the embrace of Putin.
Yes, that is the correct insight. It is a tantrum by somebody that feels emotionally connected at some level to Putin, I guess, right? Maybe in his imagination, right? Like that, this notion that Putin somehow went through the Russia hoax. Putin was laughing through the whole thing. Putin's gotten everything that he wanted the whole time. He got a kick out of the Russia hoax. It achieved its ends. I'm saying Russia hoax in scare quotes here, but like the his interference in the election, it achieved his ends of dividing the country. It created a quasi-legitimacy in Trump, or the challenging of his legitimacy. He got the person in there that he preferred, who, you know, allowed him free reign to, you know, continue to expand his power. Like, Putin has got everything that he wanted out of all of this, up to and until when Ukraine started fighting back after he invaded Kyiv. Like, Trump has like constructed this imaginary other world where Putin was like him, besieged by Shifty Adam Schiff and the media and a shadowy cabal.
You don't think Putin was really wounded, you know, suffering, you know, psychologically had a tough time when Adam Schiff criticized him? Yet it's funny, Trump is a thin-skinned bully, and he sort of wants to believe Putin is too. He must know at some level that Putin is infinitely tougher than he is, and couldn't care less what Adam Schiff says, and cares about results, not about feelings. But, you know, that is interesting, the psychology of that, right? Trump wants to put himself on the same level as Putin. He knows that he's not.
It also just kind of ties into the whole manliness, masculinity conversation that they're all having, right? That it's like there is some notion that that kind of performative temper tantrum, the bullying, the talking down, the condescending to Zelensky is going to reveal themselves to be the tough ones rather than the ones like beset by their emotional distress and, you know, trying to intimidate somebody who's actually shown real courage. But I guess it seems to be like landing with at least their own voters.
I mean, I think that's such an important point that, I mean, Trump and J.D. Vance would not have stayed in Kyiv on February 25th, 2022. They would have been on the first plane out, and they and their families and whatever, you know buddies they have in various schemes and grifts and so forth, they would have been leaving from wherever there was danger. But at some level, there's a deep resentment of Zelensky for actually being courageous and manly and in his slightly understated way, you might say. I think the not wearing the suit is a comical MAGA complaint too, which normally they like informality, authenticity, right? You know, so, but in this case, Trump's the guy who wears the suit and Vance in this case. So they have to turn it against Zelensky, that like Churchill when he came to the White House in 1941, 42, 43, wore his kind of battle, you might say, you know, battle outfits, battle fatigues in effect.
The fallout from this, the minerals deal is not signed. What happens is after the temper tantrum that is thrown by the president and vice president, they retreat to their separate quarters. Trump and his team stays in the Oval Office. Zelensky and his goes to, I forget what other room they went to hold in. And then rather than go talk to Zelensky himself, Trump sends Waltz and Rubio in. We saw the continued shrinking of little Marco Rubio, who had to go and tell Zelensky to leave. Later that day, high-level administration sources said that military aid is now in question, and the quote is, they're fortunate it is not off already. So that's kind of where things stand on the deal. And then yesterday, on Sunday, European leaders met without us. It was in London. It was France, Germany, Canada, UK. They met. They signaled that they're doubling down on supporting Ukraine and maybe boosting military aid. But obviously, there's a lot of frustration and hard feelings at the White House. So what say you about the current state of play?
No, it's a big moment. It's the continuation of what we saw already 2 weeks ago, obviously, with the Trump-Putin phone call, the Hegseth and J.D. Vance speeches, the Rubio visit to Riyadh. This is kind of the culmination of it, I would say, the betrayal of Ukraine. There was no fresh military aid coming from Trump anyway. The idea that he's cutting it off because Zelensky was disrespectful is in a way, I think, ridiculous. Maybe he'll stop some of the aid that's already in the pipeline, I suppose. The degree to which the Europeans saw right away what was happening is striking. A friend sent me some headlines from German newspapers on Saturday, and they saw this was not just about Ukraine. It was about fundamental pivot of American foreign policy. Forget about NATO. Forget about Europe. Forget about defending democracy. He's with Putin. He'll be cutting deals with Putin in accord with what he sees to be their interests. German foreign minister had a terrific speech where she said that, you know, how terrifying and terrible it was that America joined the side of the perpetrators, not the victims of aggression and of crimes. And so Europe understood right away. Russia understood. There's a good article in the Washington Post this morning quoting various Putin spokespeople and allies about how happy they are. It was a gift. The whole thing is, well, everything's wonderful. These are basically, we don't even have to.
Yeah, I've got this here. This is Peskov. Yeah, Peskov says the new administration is rapidly changing all foreign policy configurations. This largely aligns with our vision.
Right.
That's the Russian spokesman. I mean,
that's the truth. And they're happy. You know, it's interesting. They want to rub it in, right? They don't want to give Trump a lot of dignity. They don't mind humiliating him a little, but maybe they think that makes him even more susceptible to being pushed around further. And I'm not so sure they're going to make a deal, so they may want to also sort of get ready to really just try to conquer all of Ukraine and dare Trump to do anything, which they seem pretty convinced he won't. So the Europeans are in a state, correctly. We'll see if they can help Ukraine defend itself. I'm worried about 6 months or 18 to 24 months from now that they decide, oof, we're over here, US has walked away, we better cut our own deals with Russia, start the energy going again. And you can imagine a very bad cascade of appeasement. But I've got to say, to their credit, that has not been happening yet. And their reaction's been the opposite. They do not want to betray Ukraine, and Zelensky's not going to give up, and Ukraine's not going to give up. But sustaining the world order without the U.S. on side, asking the Europeans to do it and our Asian friends to do it, that's a tall task. I would have been very skeptical it could happen a year ago. Now I think, oh, maybe they can do it for a while, at least until we come back on side. And the other point I'll make just is that Congress could act to mitigate some of the damage, but that would require a few Republicans having some courage, and we haven't seen a lot of that, did we, this weekend? We saw a couple, right?
Yeah, I mean, Don Bacon was on 60 Minutes, I guess, but I mean, the next time that he does something actually substantive rather than just with his words will be the first time, so we'll believe it when I see it.
If data management is slowing down your business, you need the Intuit ERP. If one entity is here, and one here, and one here, and one here, you need the Intuit ERP. If scaling your business feels like starting over, you need the Intuit ERP. Intuit Enterprise Suite is the AI-native ERP solution that consolidates, migrates, and automates, all in one place. Learn more at intuit.com/ERP.
They say everything happens for a reason, but I suspect everything happens for a reason, like this commercial break. Did you need 15 seconds away from music or 15 seconds to eat a Reese's? Perhaps it's true. Everything happens for a Reese's.
I mean, just kind of gaming this out as you sort of talked about the potential like ways that it could develop as far as Europe is concerned. I just think about the position Trump is in now. Like the sticking point that really undergirded this disagreement, like beyond like J.D. Vance just like wanting to be a condescending douche, like the actual substantive sticking point was that Zelensky is trying to say, I need security guarantees, like that we can't trust Putin if you make a deal, right? Like we might make a deal and then, you know, who knows, a few months later he, you know, props up another reason to make an incursion somewhere or whatever, test the deal. I need security guarantees. And Trump didn't want to do that, didn't want to give those. And from our position now, it's like, even if, you know, Zelensky comes back, tail between his legs, you know, Mark Thiessen is writing in the Washington Post opinion page today. It's unclear today whether sucking up to Trump fits under free markets or personal liberties in the new rubric on the Washington Post opinion page. But he wrote that Zelensky must suck up to Trump for the good of his country and must come back and must get on Trump's good side and blah, blah, blah. Like, even if that happened, there's not really a situation where you could trust either side of a security guarantee,
right,
if you're Zelensky, right? Like, maybe you have to do such a deal anyway, and it's just pragmatic, hope for the best, you know, cross the next bridge when you get there type situation. But like, you know, it's hard to really conceive that Donald Trump is going to offer any real security, even if we have some skin in the game with rare earth minerals or whatever.
I mean, totally. That's really a key point. I mean, who would trust Trump? Let's say there's a fake peace agreement and even Russia gets some additional territory or something and they're doing horrible things in the territory they have. And then they have a fake excuse for an incursion. What is Trump going to do? I mean, but this is where the Europeans saw this too and saw that, just to take that to the next step, what is NATO anymore? NATO depends on Article 5 and on the assumption that we're all in if someone's attacked. Will Trump act if the Russians do a little green men thing in Estonia? Will Trump act if the Russians try to to subvert governments and of NATO members, as they have been trying in Romania and elsewhere? I mean, the degree to which the whole post-war structure is at risk, not just Ukraine. I mean, that I think is what the Europeans saw right away. And that's where they're really talking pretty seriously. Again, I can't quite believe they can sustain a security arrangement without the U.S. being the anchor. That's been the case we have been for 80 years. Maybe they will. The incoming Chancellor Merz is talking that way. They are increasing defense spending. It looks like they're going to. We'll see. I'm very worried that that's hard to sustain. They'll have their own domestic politics. Parties in Europe are going to say, what are we doing here? America's gone in the other direction. We need to go that way too. So I'm very worried about that. And as we were saying, how much is Congress going to do? In theory, Europe and Congress could sort of make up for a U.S. president, maybe. But we haven't had to run this experiment for 80 years, right? We haven't had a situation where an American president fundamentally wants to just destroy the post-World War II order.
Yeah, and we talked about this with Susan Glasser on the show, a couple of episodes ago, and she makes the same point about Estonia, and it's like, I mean, it's impossible to fathom, right? Like at this point, that Trump would come to the defense of one of these other NATO countries. I mean, maybe, who the hell knows, right? The last person in his ear at the right moment ends up being somebody that flatters him in the right kind of way, but there's certainly no reason to have any belief that we would. And that does call into question the whole NATO agreement at this point. Meanwhile, it is worth mentioning the war is ongoing. Russia launched an attack on Kharkiv yesterday that injured 8, including a 7-year-old child. And I think that is important to point out, because the Trump advance side of this argument is it's premised on this notion that Russia's behaving. We're not even asking anything from Russia. Russia's not the problem child here, right? It's Ukraine that's the problem. And if we just decide to come to the table, then it'll all be good. Putin will do what we ask. And that is in total conflict with what is actually happening.
And I think, was it Friday or Saturday, that the Washington Post reported that under Pete Hegseth, but presumably with Trump's sign off, the Defense Department has stopped a program that was trying to both deal with Russian cyber offenses and other kinds of those kinds of offenses, let's say non-kinetic offenses here in the U.S. And also we had some counter offenses presumably going on to disrupt their stuff. And they seem to have called that off. So basically, we're not considering Russia an enemy anymore. I mean, how long can the sanctions last once you have this attitude? I mean, why should Trump even keep them on at this point? He has no, what's the reason? What's he asking for? What's he punishing Putin for? One thing that really alarmed me about the article in the Post, it's a little murky, and I'd be curious to see follow-up reporting. It feels like we're also letting down all our defenses against Russian intervention in the 2026 or 2028 elections. I mean, let's go back. Why do we have this concern with Russian cyber and social media type activities? I think we have good reasons to have those concerns. Well, as Trump said in 2016, he wanted Russia to intervene, right? Please, what did he say? Please release the emails. Well, I guess that was about the stolen emails with WikiLeaks. But Trump, he likes Putin because he likes Putin. He likes authoritarians. He also likes Putin because he himself wants to be an authoritarian here. And he thinks Putin might well be a useful ally to have in that effort.
What it said was that Hegseth ordered the U.S. Cyber Command to stand down all planning against Russia, including offensive digital actions, according to three people familiar with the matter. So we'll see. But I think your point is well taken, that if you just accept the Trump framework presented at the press conference and since, and frankly at the speech J.D. Vance gave in Europe, et cetera, if you accept their framework, there is no rationale for sanctions on Russia, right? The sanctions on Russia are there because of their invasion into Ukraine and because of their actions, targeting our elections, right? Trump thinks that those were a hoax and that Ukraine was asking for it because, they were wearing their skirt too short. So they've put themselves in a box. Maybe they want to be in this box, but they've put themselves in a position where it makes it very challenging for them to even make the case in a way that is coherent for changing course beyond the course, the very Russia favorable course that they're on. So.
If data management is slowing down your business, you need the Intuit ERP. If one entity is here, and one here, and one here, and one here, you need the Intuit ERP. If scaling your business feels like starting over, you need the Intuit ERP. Intuit Enterprise Suite is the AI-native ERP solution that consolidates, migrates, and automates, all in one place. Learn more at intuit.com/ERP.
They say everything happens for a reason, but I suspect everything happens for a reason. Like this commercial break. Did you need 15 seconds away from music? Or 15 seconds to eat a Reese's? Perhaps it's true. Everything happens for a reason.
We have tariffs also happening tonight. Maybe we'll see. Trump insisted that the tariffs on goods imported from Canada and Mexico will go into effect Tuesday because of fentanyl, I guess. And he also doubled the tariffs on China to 20%. The question is whether he will once again do the "I'm giving you a reprieve because you're sending Mounties to the border" thing with Canada or Mexico. Howard Lutnick floated yesterday on Fox, the Commerce Secretary, that Trump is considering reducing the tariffs down from 25%. TBD, I guess you don't want to keep going around and around here with their little Kabuki theater act, but I do think that they're in a tenuous spot economically. I think that's actually really the more relevant point here. Like, the market has not been doing well. The market's been coming back down. A lot of concerns. The Atlanta Fed projections for GDP growth last week, way down from where they were after Trump was elected. And, you know, so this kind of stuff is going to have real impact. And eventually, again, it's similar to this box that I'm talking about with Russia. He's like rhetorically put himself in a box where he's going to have to do these things at some point, you would think, or else he would feel weak and humiliated. But I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the tariffs thing is the most bewildering. I mean, in the sense that that just seems genuinely to be his obsession. And I don't even think it's really a big MAGA obsession particularly. And if you combine it with slightly rising inflation, which looks to be the case, and slightly rising unemployment, which could be the case, that could really hurt the economy. It's such a question. I mean, what do you think, Demi? If the economy is weaker 6 months from now, does that make Trump revert to more normie Republicanism, or does it increase his temptation and tendency to go in a sort of real authoritarian direction?
It's a great question, and one that I've been thinking about. And my gut says that it would lead to panic, right? And lashing out and moving more towards the authoritarian direction. I don't know. I mean, I guess it kind of depends on how bad it is, right? But if it's just kind of somewhat bad and things are, you know, muddling along and things are not great on the margins, and, you know, he's got rich guys in his ear saying, okay, this is hurting us too much. You got to back off it. We got to get the tax cut through. I could see that as a possible outcome here. But if things get really hairy, right, like you can get to a point of hairiness where like getting rid of the tariffs and passing a tax cut or whatever doesn't really remediate the problem, right? And so I think that, you know, the worse things get, the more unhinged he would get and the more he would move towards even further down the authoritarian path, I guess is my instinct. But I don't know. And this is the thing about the first Trump term is pre-COVID, he like got pretty lucky, right? Like there weren't a lot of forces outside of his control that created crises, really. In COVID, like we saw just a massive panic and foul up. And so I kind of think that COVID, what we saw during COVID is kind of what we would see here. But I don't know. Who knows? What do you make of that?
And maybe what we saw after, you know, November 3rd to January 6th.
Right.
Now, I think we just, again, have to come back to how the first Trump term featured James Mattis, Secretary of Defense, and Tillerson, what everyone thought of him, but then Pompeo, Secretary of State, and Bolton in there, and the White McMaster, then Bolton. I mean, such a different cast of characters, a Republican Party that still had some memory that they were supposed to act as members of Congress and not simply as Trump lackeys. I mean, they were pretty bad, don't get me wrong. But it's so different. That's I guess, what strikes one the most, right? Marco Rubio pathetically trying to climb into Trump's, stay in, I guess, Trump's, not even good graces, but enough graces that he doesn't get fired tomorrow by those pathetic statement he put out afterwards, you know, kind of, and then Lindsey Graham too. And what was striking about those two statements is they really were Stalinist or Stalinoid, I guess is the word, in the sense that it wasn't just, look, it's, you know, Trump did the right thing and Zelensky has to come. It wasn't Mark Thiessen. Zelensky has to come around. We still have a chance to make this all work, but Zelensky has to be a nicer guy. That would be bad, but that would be a kind of coherent point statement by someone who is pro-Trump but does actually want to help Ukraine. They did not go that way, right? They really were all in to show Trump that Trump had said Zelensky was a threat to peace or couldn't be a partner for peace. And we're saying the exact same thing. And then Lindsey says something about we just may have to, in effect, get rid of Zelensky. So the degree to which they felt they had to abase themselves is, I think, very sadly very revealing. But yeah, in terms of the authoritarianism, I don't know. Yeah, he really triples down on the deportations, more than to Guantanamo, more horrible treatment of them, more raids. I mean, you can imagine very ugly scenarios in that area in immigration, as well as in others. And what if it does come out and say that some of these Doge efforts, I don't know, God forbid, what if a real public health, real current quick public health effects. I think the indirect effects are terrible for what our biomedical, you know, research capability will be 5 years from now, and the kinds of people who will go into those things, and keeping decent people in government. There are a million problems. But what if Ebola gets loose in Africa or something? I mean, The degree to which Trump is not the type to say, gee, I guess we made a mistake, we need to restore this stuff. Or maybe he would. He's done that a couple of cases, I guess, in the last 2-3 weeks. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't like bad news. The thing that has always protected us the most from disaster with Trump is like he does have a hole in his heart where he wants to be loved. You know, he plays the role of tough guy who doesn't care, but he really does. And so there have been several occasions where, you know, he got bad news and then, you know, you kind of back off, do some face saving things. So I'm not saying that he wouldn't do that, but I guess my point is sometimes problems get out of your control, right?
It doesn't matter whether he backs off at that point. Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. One more thing on the Doge. Sam Stein's reporting this in the Morning Shots newsletter this morning. People should sign up for it. Nick Enrich, who is the acting assistant administrator for global health at USAID, he was placed on administrative leave for disseminating memos outlining the failure of the Trump administration to follow through on its pledge to allow waivers for certain types of life-saving foreign aid. He sent another memo that the Bulwark received. And I mean, it's pretty alarming just talking about like the degree to which these cuts are going to have massive ramifications for children, malnourished children, pregnant women, obviously people with HIV and AIDS in Africa. And, you know, again, this is a situation where Trump allowed Musk to go do the cuts. Rubio had said that he wanted to reinstate, you know, certain types of aid, and it's not happening. It's not getting reinstated. The damage is happening. And, you know, the guy that's blowing the whistle on it, instead of them backing off more and trying to put in place the waivers that Rubio wanted, the guy's getting put on administrative leave. I mean, I think that's a pretty alarming example of what we'd expect to see.
I've been thinking a little about how sort of what the domestic policy and foreign policy sides have in common. And it does seem to be a similar kind of just utter recklessness and cavalier attitude towards existing structures. Again, one can imagine some of these areas of AID and NIH and so forth saying, look, we really want to save money. We want to weed out a third, a half, two-thirds of some of what's being spent in some of these programs. We're going to do it in a systematic way. And a year from now, you'll see progress. 2 years from now, usually presidents have a four-year horizon, right? 4 years from now, we'll be down 60%. You guys will be really pleased. And you won't notice anything because, you know what? A lot of this money was wasted and was spent on DEI and on, you know, woke stuff and all this. That's the normal thing you do, leaving aside whether they would have been right that the money is wasted. The recklessness, the pleasure they take in the slashing and leaving pregnant women without care in Africa, or in firing civil servants who've worked hard for X number of years with no notice. I mean, which again is utterly unnecessary. The amount of money at stake is minute compared to giving them, you know, a year, not renewing their contracts for people from a year from now, or treating people in a decent way. They like the cruelty of Doge. They like the cruelty in a way of bullying Zelensky. But the recklessness in both cases, assuming that things won't just really go bad in the world or at home, is what the foreign and domestic policies have got. Elon's Doge and Trump's, you know, treatment of Zelensky are sort of parallel in some ways. And I don't know, we're a big, strong country, you know, we could survive a lot of bad things, and maybe 6 months from now, it won't feel that different in people's lives. But I'm not so sure about that, really. I'm very struck, just the number of people I've talked to, I don't know if you found this, not political people. I'm here in D.C., so I hear more of them. You know, the brain drain and the character drain we're going to have from the U.S. government. Two people in the military, friends of friends, I don't know them, wanted to come see me privately. Thought maybe I could give them some advice. I don't know if I really have much good advice. They're, you know, mid-career rising stars in the military, young people, a little younger even than you. And they were going to stay in, they assumed, and that make that their profession for they hoped, I think, to become, you know, general officers very high up. And now they don't. Do they want to be there with this stuff going on? Do they want to have to weigh whether they have to obey orders that they think might be unlawful, but they won't have a JAG to help tell them that because they fired the JAGs and they're putting in compliant people, presumably. The number of people, and this is the military, then there's public health, and there's a million other things, right? I mean, the Justice Department, the degree to which whatever one thinks of the civil service, the military, the civilians at DOD, the public health establishment, they all are not perfect, God knows. But the degree to which we're putting it all at risk. And again, for what? For what? I mean, because they have
for
some...
For what?
That's what I don't understand, really. Honestly, though. I mean, you know...
Enjoyment of other people's suffering, I guess. Right. I mean, for, you know, to be able to say that they are going after these shadowy elites that people hate, I guess, as part of their, like, imaginary internet war, like, really, I think is the answer. Like, that they are on the other side of this kind of like imaginary culture battle that they think that they're fighting through tweets. And I don't know, because it's not about balancing the budget. We know that based on the budget.
No, they're not earnest libertarians who have convinced themselves excessively that the private sector will do this better. And we've got some studies here from, you know, Cato and someone at AEI showing it. That's not the spirit in which it's being, that might be dangerous in its own way, but that's not the spirit in which, that was Reagan to some degree. That's not the spirit in which this is being done, you know?
If data management is slowing down your business, you need the Intuit ERP. If one entity is here, and one here, and one here, and one here, you need the Intuit ERP. If scaling your business feels like starting over, you need the Intuit ERP. Intuit Enterprise Suite is the AI-native ERP solution that consolidates, migrates, and automates, all in one place. Learn more at intuit.com/ERP.
It's said everything happens for a reason, but maybe everything happens for a Reese's. Take noise-canceling headphones. Do they block hearing to heighten taste? That sound seems to show everything happens for a Reese's.
In addition to recklessness, the one also hallmark of Trumpism is the corruption. So we should close by talking about the crypto scam, which I think might end up being the biggest scam in the history of American politics. To show you my sense for things this morning, like where I was at, I was going back to the Teapot Dome scandal. And I was like, how much money was involved in the Teapot Dome scandal? It turns out it was $400,000 at the time was the bribe, which is about $6 million in current dollars. So not nothing. I mean, that is a big scandal. That was certainly, you know, something worth creating controversy and firings over and ignominy. But what is happening in crypto is going to be unbelievable compared to that, like 10, 20, 100x. Here is the announcement Trump put up. A U.S. crypto reserve will elevate this critical industry after years of corrupt attacks by the Biden administration. Every accusation is a confession, which is why my executive order on digital assets directed the presidential working group to move forward on a crypto strategic reserve that includes these three particular currencies. Then he adds to the thread later, because I guess probably somebody who had money in Bitcoin or Ethereum was mad that they were not specifically singled out, maybe his son Eric. So he adds, and obviously Bitcoin and Ethereum as well, other valuable cryptocurrencies will be the heart of the reserve. I also love Bitcoin and Ethereum! Exclamation point. How is this the fucking president of the United States that is sending this? Like, this is like a late night television scam level rhetoric here about his support for Bitcoin and Ethereum. Eric Trump had tweeted last week about crypto, buy the dip! Exclamation point, which seems a little bit like some insider trading knowledge to me. I don't know. I guess we would leave that up to the totally toothless SEC to look into. But just to like sum this up in the way that is the most simple, the theory of the case here is that cryptocurrencies are so valuable, this digital gold, so to speak, is going to be so valuable in the future that the United States government needs to purchase and hold massive quantities of several different types of Bitcoin, you know, to hold in some kind of digital Fort Knox that we need to have for who knows, God knows what in the future, to ensure that the United States has enough of these supposed currencies, you know, in order to I don't know, deal with some future crypto-related crisis. It is an absurd proposition. Bitcoin and Ethereum have like some value. Some of these other ones have no value. Like, it is literally like buying the US government, like buying pet rocks or Beanie Babies or something, and being like, we're going to hold these in a strategic reserve somewhere to make sure that in the future we have enough babies for the beanie market. And it is a preposterous scheme. It is going to enrich Trump family. The Secretary of Commerce, Howard Lutnick, and his family are very deeply invested in this. David Sacks, who is the crypto czar, says that he divested from crypto, but it's unclear exactly what all that, what that leads to. I mean, there's like no words for the preposterousness of this proposed plan. So I don't know. Do you have any words for me?
No, you've described it very well. Someone said this would be illegal in every country of the world. This is not like, oh, the U.S. has very strict rules. We have, you know, we have SEC. This is just slightly more relaxed attitude. This is just stealing money from the taxpayer or from Marx or from, I suppose, the Marx who didn't, you know, who didn't know when they were supposed to buy and when they were supposed to sell on these exchanges.
Right? Yeah, the Trump coin, you're stealing from the Marx. Okay, which is bad enough in itself, right? The fact that our president is like running a massive pump and dump operation to steal money from regular people in order to enrich himself and also to create a fund where other people can bribe him, right, including possibly Chinese nationals like Justin Sun, who put in tens of millions of dollars into Trump's various digital grifts. And now the SEC is no longer prosecuting him. Convenient. I had this guy, Jason Calacanis, on the podcast a while back, and some of the listeners, you know, maybe might not have been their favorite episode for some of them, because Jason was Trump curious, I guess I would call him. Not really pro Trump, but certainly, you know, not anti-Trump to the degree that we are. He's a tech guy, he has a podcast, including he's on a podcast with the Trump crypto czar, David Sacks. So I think this is interesting because, you know, him and David have a relationship. And like he wrote this, it's a terrible idea to spend taxpayer money buying the crypto bags of the people who donated many millions to him. It's even worse idea to pick winners, like pick random cryptocurrencies to invest in. He puts it like this: why not a U.S. strategic tech reserve where we buy Apple, Google, and Microsoft shares? Why not a real estate strategic reserve where we buy real estate assets from huge companies? When you put it in these kind of contexts, like, you just see how ridiculous this is. And the people that are going to benefit from this are the people that have invested their money in these currencies, made big, these, not, they're not currencies, but like made big bets into these crypto assets. And like now, thanks to the taxpayers, like, they're going to see a huge return. We've already seen it this morning. Like, all of these currencies that Trump named are up 10%. So if you like listened to Eric Trump last week when he said buy the dip, you've made now 10% just on the speculation side of it. Like, imagine the amount of money these guys would make if we really put US taxpayer dollars into their like worthless cryptocurrencies. It's like, truly, I guess that's just like, I mean, at least in Teapot Dome, they were selling land that existed to drill oil in for right. cash. I mean, it was just a good old fashioned corruption. You know, I'm going to give you something in exchange for cash. In this case, we're just giving people's taxpayer dollars away for not in exchange for essentially nothing, so that a bunch of people can make a lot of money. It's truly astonishing.
Do you think the kleptocratic and plutocratic side of this Trump, second Trump administration, it was always there, obviously, in the first one, but so much more visible and shameless and massive, it looks
just
like.
Think about his whole career.
Could they pay some political price for that, or what do you think?
Yeah, I think potentially. No, of course I think they could pay a political price for this. I mean, some crypto people are going to like it, so we'll get some political benefit from among some corners. But like, of course I think that they could end up paying a political price. A lot of people didn't sign up for this. And again, Trump somehow was able to maintain the reputation of being the apprentice business guy Trump, rather than being the guy that went bankrupt in casinos and had a fake university and had all these other pyramid schemes and other things that he was involved in. So like, I do think that the second Trump term could end up looking, you know, being the Trump University of terms, where all of his scams crumble around us. Unfortunately, you know, he would suffer a political price for that, but a lot of us are going to suffer too. So there you go. Bill, any other final thoughts?
No, that was well said.
All right. Everybody else, It's Mardi Gras tomorrow. Are you ready to celebrate? Are you ready to celebrate? When your beads, I'm going to... Am I going to do an uplifting episode tomorrow? I don't know. Probably not. But we'll have some fun Mardi Gras music to go with the episode. We'll see you all back here then. Have a good one. Peace.
You could thank me now. Go ahead. Thank me later. Yeah, I know what I said. But later doesn't always come. So instead, it's a okay. You could thank me now. Yeah. Well, all right. Here I go. Mahalo from the hardest act to follow. Lately I've been drinking like there's a message in a bottle. Alohas to women with no ties, to men that I know well, that way there are no lies. You can thank me now for all the info I give to you niggas, I'm on the brink of influential. I'm here for you niggas, I guess a hit doesn't add up to a career for you niggas. I must have been hard to watch, what a year for you niggas. It's December 31st and we in Miami just meditating. You got your resolutions, we just got reservations. Living out a dream, it feels like I stayed up. And we just wanna party, Pat Ron straight up. Fuck that old shit, I'm on new things. OVO click, Red Wing Boot Gang. Yeah, we want it all, half was never the agreement. Who'd have thought the route we chosen would ever end up this scenic? I could relate to kids going straight to the league when they recognize that you got what it takes to succeed. And that's around the time that your idols become your rivals. You make friends with Mike, but gotta AI him for your survival. Damn, I swear sports and music are so synonymous, cause we wanna be them, and they wanna be us. Yeah. So on behalf of the demanded and the entertainment that you take for granted, you could thank me now. And oh my goodness, you're welcome, you're welcome. At this point, me is who I'm trying to save myself from. Rappers hit me up and I never know what to tell them, cause they think that I can help them get back to where they fell from. But drink up, cause everyone here is good tonight, except the niggas that I came with, they good for life. Yeah, that's how you know it's going down, in case another chance never comes around. You could thank me now. Go ahead. Thank me later, yeah, I know what I said. But later doesn't always come, so instead, it's a okay. You could thank me now.
Borg Podcast is produced by Katie Cooper with audio engineering and editing by Jason Brown.
Your social media feed delivers plenty of advice, but it doesn't know you. It doesn't ask questions. It doesn't give physical exams or order tests. Doctors do. At the American Medical Association, we believe the best care starts with a real conversation with someone who understands the science and your unique health. So stay curious, ask questions, but when it's time to make decisions, make them with a doctor. Learn more at AMAHealthVersusHype.org. That's AMAHealthVSHype.org.
If you want something done right, you do it yourself. That's why you change your own oil. You wouldn't trust your engine to just anybody. So go with the full synthetic motor oil you can trust. Pennzoil Ultra Platinum offers engine protection for the lifetime of your vehicle. So do it right with Pennzoil Ultra Platinum. Stock up now at Walmart. Pennzoil. Long may we drive. Limited lubrication warranty for lifetime engine protection. Other conditions apply, including enrollment and receipt requirements. See Pennzoil.com/warranty for full details and terms.